You start the book with this idea of life as calls and responses. Tell me a little more about that.
Well, when I began thinking about the different stories to include in the book, I thought about those particular events that have really had a strong calling for me, whether it be geography or whether it be a political issue or whether it be an individual. And so I selected certain events in my life, certain work situations in my life that were really strong calls where I responded with a yes. And I do say in the book that there were times that I thought I had a strong calling, and I responded with a yes. And down the road, maybe I discovered that I was hearing the wrong call. But the chapters in the book are very strong calls that I had a very positive response to.
And as you traveled, did you expect you'd write a book about these journeys someday?
There were certain chapters in the book that were earlier than when I began thinking about writing, writing as a profession, writing books. So some of the chapters were the material was collected with a sense that I might write about it in the future. Earlier chapters, although I kept copious notes and journals, I don't think I was really had the idea that I was going to write a book.
Do you think the idea of writing a book in the later chapters influenced it all the way you thought as you traveled?
Well, I think in terms of gathering my material, for sure, and recording interviews, making sure that I had photographs, a lot of resource material that I would not necessarily have thought about in earlier trips. For example, the first chapter is my work situation as a volunteer on a kibbutz in Israel. I did keep a very detailed journal, and I did take some photographs, but I think if I had... And I was intending to write, actually, a newspaper article on the experience, and I did do that. But I was in a very different frame of mind at that point, and I could have used a lot more resources at that time for that article, or if I thought I was going to include it in a book at a later time, I would have recorded a lot more interviews. I would have been much more conscious about the things I photographed.
And near the beginning of Journeyman, you mentioned that you like to carry a spirit-filled amulet with you on the road as you travel. And for you, for you, one of those objects is a Saint Christopher, being the patron saint of travelers.
Correct.
Why carry something like that?
I think when I first started traveling long distances, I discovered that there were certain things that were helpful for me to have. I mean, on a practical level, a Swiss Army knife, basic cooking utensils, ground cover, a basic tent. There was also something about collecting items, spirit-filled or items that were reminders of something that created a foundation for me or provided me with just a sense of well-being or security. So as I continued to travel, I began picking up amulets. They could be stones. They could be the St. Christopher's medal that I do carry with me. A little figure from Peru, a little stone figure. Just various little items that I put in my pocket, and if I'm in a situation that's particularly uncomfortable or when I just feel like I need to be grounded, an amulet or a little figurine or a stone from a river in India can be very helpful, can be very grounding for me.
Okay. Yeah. And religion and spirituality come up in many of your adventures.
That's right.
some of that is intentional, like when you spend time with the Mayan healer or visit the Zen monastery in Japan. Mm-hmm. What is about these spiritual destinations that draws you?
Well, I guess we have to back up to 1973. We could even go further back than that. When I was in high school, I was part of a church work project on a Navajo reservation in Arizona. And when I was participating in that work situation, I was introduced into the Native American church. And people on this reservation where I was working participated in services in the Native American church. Well, at that time, I was a sophomore in high school. I had grown up in the middle of Kansas in a very conservative area. I had never thought about the possibility of Native American traditions being integrated with Christian traditions, which is basically what the Native American church is. I think maybe that was the beginning of an awakening for me or an opening into spiritual and religious practices that were much broader than what I had ever experienced in my life up to that point. I had also worked on a Quaker project the summer after my junior year in high school, and that introduced me again to a very different way of sitting and worshiping, basically sitting in silence. And that, again, opened another door for me in terms of spiritual and religious practices. So I think that interest began in my high school years, maybe even earlier than that. But it was in 1973 when I made a monastic retreat at the Abbey of Gethsemane in Bardstown, Kentucky. And I did not grow up Catholic. When I went on the retreat, I had very little background in monastic practice other than what I had read. And so again, entering into that kind of spiritual religious setting introduced me to yet another way of practicing spirit or religious practices. Since that retreat in 1973, I've continued participating in silent retreats over the years. Those have become a really important part of my life and integrated into my life. And I've also been a part of a Buddhist Sangha over the years. I've been active with Sufi groups in the past. And so this interest of mine in terms of spiritual and religious practices has continued to grow over the years and continue to grow.
That's fantastic. Journeyman also mentions some things that piqued my attention as a reader, mostly these unplanned religious run-ins, like when you hitchhiked your way to Alaska and you rode with the Assemblies of God minister who asked
yes.
if you'd accepted Jesus.
That's right.
Things like that. How do experiences like those ones, those sort of unexpected religious run-ins sort of shape your travel experiences?
Well, maybe I can back up a little bit with that chapter just to let the listeners know that that chapter is about my hitchhiking from New York to Alaska and back to New York in 1976. That was my way of celebrating the bicentennial. One of my rides happened to be with an Assembly of God minister. The experience was a very positive one. We had a very intimate conversation about his wife, about both of his sons, about some of his religious practices. I think for me, who would have known that I would have been picked up by an Assembly of God minister? And I probably had preconceived notions about what kind of conversation I would end up having with an Assembly of God minister, that he might be proselytizing or he might push his religious practices on me. In fact, in that kind of situation where I was a hitchhiker and he was giving me some assistance, it was really an opportunity for him to share some very intimate parts of his life with me, aside from his being a minister and his religious practices. And it was also an opportunity for me to ask him questions about his practices and also to share my own background and some of my own experiences.
And your background is fairly mixed. Tell me a little bit, just briefly, about your own
sure.
religious background.
Sure. Well, I grew up in the middle of Kansas, a little town north of Wichita. I grew up in a family that had really a mix of Presbyterian church and the Mennonite church. So oftentimes our holidays were a mix of those two religious practices. The Mennonites, of course, are pacifists, and all the people on my father's side were Mennonites. My mother grew up in a more traditional Protestant religious family, and so it was a mix of those two traditions that I grew up with in Kansas. Then later, I actually was part of an Episcopalian community for a short time. Later, I was very active with a Catholic parish in Portland, Oregon. This was in the 1980s when I was doing a lot of political work around Latin American issues, Latin American solidarity issues. The particular parish that I was working with was a sanctuary for a Guatemalan family who had come into the States via an underground railroad. And because they were on the church grounds, government authorities could not remove them. So they were political refugees, basically. Political refugees that our government would not recognize at that time.
Do you find that traveling itself is a spiritual experience at all for you?
Oh, absolutely. There's a British writer and producer by the name of Stephen Poliakoff, and I recently saw a film of his, and one of the characters in the film made a statement that as long as I keep moving, I know who I am. And that really rang true to me. There's something about being on the road. There's something about continuing to move that reveals something about myself and also keeps me open and to some extent vulnerable and available to whatever I happen to be experiencing at the time. So, and to me, there's a spiritual element to that. So definitely long treks, hitchhiking, being on the road, being in a culture that I'm not familiar with is very much of a spiritual experience for me.
And where do you think you'll go next?
I have a couple of ideas. One is spend time in Ethiopia, actually in the northern part of the country where there is a strong monastic tradition within an Orthodox environment. I'd also like to spend some time in Uruguay and Paraguay and explore the Guarani Indian populations there.
Great. Well, I think that it just about wraps us up, but one last question. What do you hope people get from reading Journeyman?
Well, as we talked about earlier, we talked about calls and responses, and I think what I would hope that a reader would gain from reading this book was encouragement, or is encouragement, to follow their calls, to respond with a yes, to if there is an intuitive feeling about a strong interest, a passion towards something, then move on it. Go with it and see where it takes you.